Thank you, Susan. And I think we like to think of ourselves as a global firm, not a conglomerate necessarily, but that's okay. Joe and I will be talking today on the topic of assessing employee satisfaction to drive workforce initiatives and increase employee retention. So I know a lot of the other presenters will be talking about kind of workforce development, and many of you interested in kind of how do we train and develop our workforce, and a key component to that being kind of understanding the workforce. And I think this is often a overlooked step in the overall workforce development process. So, you know, without further ado, Joe and I have no relationships to disclose, the standard language there, get that out of the way. And Joe's going to run us through kind of what we're going to be talking about today.
Yes, to echo what Jeff already said, thank you so much for coming. We're glad you are here, and we hope that each of you will be able to take something away from this session that you can go back to apply to your organizations. To give you a general understanding of where we're going with the presentation, we're going to have a brief background into who we are, where we're coming from with the project. We're going to take a look at the need for assessing employee satisfaction. Oftentimes, this is something that kind of gets put on the back burner. We're going to briefly go into our approach that we use, and then we'll be looking at each stage of the evaluation process that we use and identifying some key considerations and lessons learned. Based on all of this information that we're going to be presenting today, this is based on our experience only. And so at the end of the presentation, we're going to have a Q&A session, and we would welcome each of you to provide your own ideas as well if there are key lessons learned that you have experienced in your own projects.
Pretty self-explanatory in terms of who we are. I'm Jeff Beeger, manager of Deloitte Consulting, and Joe Dunn, consultant at Deloitte Consulting. And it, as Susan pointed out, the project that we worked on, a little bit of a background before we get into it, was a five-year kind of project at CDC, looking at basically an assessment of their workforce within one of the operating divisions at CDC. And a lot of what we talked about in terms of the key considerations and the lessons learned, probably a lot more lessons learned in the first couple years, and we improved that over time, and we can talk a little bit about some of the outside influences, things that you may want to consider when you're developing your own assessments for your workforce.
So in terms of the big question of why assess employee engagement and satisfaction, oftentimes this is kind of overlooked. When budgets are tight, organizations tend to push things like this to the back burner and say that we're going to focus on mission critical activities instead of things like employee satisfaction surveys. But we believe that in our experience that a lot of the data that you collect from your employee satisfaction surveys can be used to directly impact the mission of your organization. So for example, by developing a greater understanding of some of the key concerns of your workforce, that's going to allow you to develop initiatives specifically to address these issues that you can use to retain your top talent. Another example, by understanding what motivates your employees to perform, that's going to allow you to take additional steps to ensure that nothing is inhibiting them from achieving that top level of performance. And finally, I would like to point out that assessments can be designed in ways that will reveal not only the top areas of concern for your workforce, but then also which areas are most important to your employees in terms of moving the needle of employee satisfaction and making sure that your employees are utilized in their best possible way. This slide provides a brief overview of our overall approach. As you can see, there are five phases of our research process that we like to use. In terms of the design of the assessment, this is very important because it's setting up the rest of your approach. And so you should notice that all phases in your assessment are linked. You need to have the final report in mind as you are designing your evaluation in order to make sure that you're going to maximize the data that you receive from your workforce. One key component of the design phase that I wanted to point out was that when you're outlining your assessment objectives, you need to make sure that you are also seeking executive endorsement and leadership buy-in for the process, because at the end of the process, when you're reporting out the results, these people are going to be the ones that are owning the results going forward. And so if you're going to be making changes to your workforce and implementing programs, you need to make sure that you are incorporating the people up front that are going to be distributing the results for you and making those changes. Briefly, in the develop phase, that's when you're focused on actually planning out how you're going to administer the survey. So you're going to be selecting your survey tool. We're going into this a little more detail later on, but in terms of the survey tool, you know, not all tools are created equally. You need to make sure that the tool that, that you select is going to effectively meet the objectives that you outlined in the design phase. In terms of administration, we're going to go over some of the key points for determining the appropriate timing of your survey. It really matters, and that's a point we're going to try to drive home. And then finally, on the analyze and the report phases, that's an area where we've seen organizations typically fall short. We put in all this effort into designing this survey and administering it and collecting the responses, and then it tends to sit on a shelf in a report. And so we're going to go into some of the steps that we've used to analyze the data and present meaningful results back to the people that are going to be receiving the reports and making changes in the future.
And starting out with the design phase, so you'll notice a pattern here. We'll be kind of presenting some key considerations and then lessons learned. And some key considerations when you're thinking about the design is really kind of thinking to the end, and whether that be if you're doing an annual assessment or kind of a point-in-time assessment. Either way, you know, how will the results of the assessment be used? And kind of thinking about that in terms of the action and the implementation when you're creating these things, when you're designing the questions. Are you using it for a comparability standpoint? Are you one kind of division within your organization and you want to compare it back out to the larger? And within the federal government, there's a lot of kind of human capital surveys that are out there. The Office of Personnel Management has a large one, but it only gets to a certain point. So when we're thinking about the design, we're thinking about, do we want to have comparable data back up to some of those surveys? So we basically ask the same questions so that we can compare, you know, your division back up to the larger. And also, you know, in finding that balance of doing that, but also being able to drill down a little bit more into some of the specifics around your organization. Another one that I'll highlight here, you know, are the survey items designed to yield valid and reliable results? You know, most of us, I assume, work in kind of scientific organizations. And often, I think one of the downfalls of workforce assessments in particular is that they're often seen as a little softer, a little more qualitative, and sometimes qualitative can be, you know, a bad word out there. So I think as much as possible, building in a really robust methodology here, both qualitative and quantitative, helps on the back end, you know, to justify the actions and the assessment itself. And then the other one, are there specific areas of concern which require a deeper dive? I think it's important to kind of recognize in the design phase that this may not be, you can't pack everything into here. If you do, number one, you're going to have if it's a survey, you're going to have a 100-question survey, which is never really a great idea. But really kind of thinking through the methodology a little bit more is that the information that you get here, what can the next steps be? Could the next steps be direct action that you can take? Maybe. Maybe it focuses you in an area. If you have no idea what's going on in your workforce from a satisfaction standpoint, from a capability standpoint, perhaps, you know, focus groups would be the next step. And we can talk a little bit about, in our experience towards the end of the presentation, over our 5-year experience, that kind of evolved a little bit. So we were able to modify the overall assessment so that in the last year, they really had a deliberate plan for engaging in focus groups and more in-depth research. And then some of the lessons learned. And I'll just point out the first one. You know, gaining leadership support and buy-in for the project is critical. You know, everyone in the room here may see the need of these kind of things, but don't underestimate necessarily the role of your leaders. And I would also say that leaderships may be hesitant to know what's going on in their workforce. If we ask the questions, it implies that you're going to do something about it. So often we're met with questions, met with barriers, met with leaders who tried to pick holes in it. So again, in this design phase, it's really important to have that strong methodology that you can back up, and just don't assume that leadership will be behind you on that. Moving on to the develop phase, really looking at the tool itself and deciding what you want to do. You know, which assessment tool provides the necessary functionality for your needs? So again, this is often an issue of scalability. In an organization that we were looking at, you know, over the 5-year period, anywhere from 800 to 1,000 employees that we were looking to assess. So for us, you know, a survey tool was the way to go. But even within that, there's many different kind of survey tools with different functionality that allow you to do different things. If you're a smaller organization, you know, maybe focus group would be the way to go. You do paper surveys, online, all the whole gamut of different tools that you can use to assess. And a lot of that comes to the overall kind of culture of your organization. When we started out, and it has evolved a little bit, there were a lot of trust issues within the workforce. So it was very important to have a tool that could be anonymous. and that we could build that into the overall methodology to reinforce that people that could give their honest opinions and not, you know, have repercussions for that. And then, you know, what is the most effective manner to communicate the assessment? Here, you're really looking at response rate. So is it something coming from your leadership? Do you work in a very hierarchical organization where if an email comes out from your director, people are going to do it? Or does it work better to come from, you know, having, you know, a committee of people, a workforce committee or something like that, that's kind of cultivating that at the grassroots level? And then some of our lessons learned, you know, as Joe pointed out, all assessment tools are not created equal. And this kind of fits mainly into the functionality standpoint. So it's a very kind of technical thing. But if you have, for our purposes, the survey, and it fluctuated every year, but somewhere around the 50 to 60 questions in total, but depending on how you answered in the tool that we used, our functionality allowed that to be a more user-friendly process. I don't know how many people have ever taken a survey where, you know, it says jump to the next one, you have to go searching for where the next one is. So having a tool, I mean, it's just a very simple thing, but having a tool that allows the person to take the assessment in an easy way can go a long way to building that overall rapport as well. So things like, you know, gating and tracking of information, just from the technical aspects of your tool are very important.
So now that we've designed our survey items and we've developed the actual instrument that we're going to use to administer the survey, we get to the administration phase. And one thing that we've noticed is that the timing for surveys is something that is often overlooked. It is very important that you actually plan out when your survey is going to be administered and what days of the week, what times of the day even the survey is going to be administered in order to ensure that you're going to get the response rates that you're looking for to be able to trust that the results are valid and reliable. In terms of things to avoid, you want to look at avoiding shortened weeks due to holidays. You want to look at other initiatives that are going on, especially other assessments that might be going on for your employees, and you want to try to avoid those if at all possible. Will you be able to avoid every single thing on the calendar? Absolutely not. We've never ran into that situation, but you should try to avoid as much as possible to increase your response rates. In terms of low response rates, do low response rates imply that employees do not care? Not necessarily. Yes, there is definitely something referred to as survey fatigue, where if your employees are continually assessed over and over again, they will be overwhelmed and they likely will not respond to your survey. But if you're looking at your response rates in the first week of your administration, you're noticing that response rates are low, don't be alarmed. What we have seen with our surveys is that we have to continually provide reminders to employees about the survey, both formally and informally. So sending out reminder emails to the people that have not responded to the survey, as well as making announcements at all hands meetings, having supervisors to remind their employees about the survey administration, things like that are very important to make sure that you get the response that you're looking for. In terms of lessons learned, generating distribution lists in advance of administration is probably not something you would typically think of. It should be pretty easy to go to your local IT department and get the list of all employees, but it's really not that easy. And if you want to monitor your response rates, you want to be able to monitor who's responded and how many people have responded, we suggest that you get these distribution lists well in advance of survey administration to take care of that information. And the last point I kind of already hit on, but avoid unnecessary employee communications. Your survey tool should allow you to load your distribution lists at the beginning of the survey, and so you can see who responded and who hasn't. This is not an issue of confidentiality because you're not going to be reporting individual responses, but in terms of making sure that you are collecting responses from as many employees as possible, it's important to use that functionality of your survey tool that you select. After your survey has been administered, it's time to analyze your data. But again, as we mentioned before, you should already have planned out what types of analysis you're going to want to do. And so for each of these key considerations, it all boils down to knowing your workforce and knowing the audience for your reporting. Different organizations have different levels of how scientific they are. And so some organizations might require a report that is very scientific. Others might be more basic. But you need to be sure to plan your analysis in a way that's going to be impactful to your workforce. In terms of lessons learned, yes, ensuring anonymity and confidentiality is key. And what we mean by that is if you are maximizing the amount of data that you receive from your organization, you're going to be doing a lot of segmentation of the data. And so you're going to be able to see what different divisions respond to on different items, and you're going to look at different workforce demographics and things like that. But there has to be a point of over-analysis is going to be identifying your key respondents. And so in terms of an example, like if you segment results by non-supervisory women in a particular division who have 5 years of experience, you're going to be pretty certain as to who you can identify those respondents. And so you should never identify it to a level that's going to jeopardize your anonymity or confidentiality of your survey. In terms of representing trend data, definitely capitalize on any previous assessments that have been done. And also, we would also add to that, use your benchmarks that are available to you. Even if you're not a federal agency, since the federal agencies do administer employee satisfaction surveys, you can use these as a benchmark to determine where your workforce is compared to different federal agencies and whatnot. But again, if you're going to do that, it's something you have to take into account in the design phase, because you want to use the same surveys, the same items, the same response scales. And so if you can incorporate that, it'll make more meaningful analysis to your employees, because a lot of times if you report that 70% of your workforce is satisfied with a particular initiative, but you don't have any type of benchmark to use, then it's not really going to be that meaningful to your employees.
All right, and one of our report and next steps is be timely, so I will be timely in my next few minutes to move on. But talking about the reporting phase of things, now that the analysis is done, really kind of thinking through how we want to report this information. And a couple of key considerations here around, the audience. And really thinking about, is your audience your leadership? Is it the employees themselves? And it may be external stakeholders as well, or maybe all three of these. From our experience, we developed different types of reporting for different audiences, using that same kind of data and reporting similar data, for a leader in a certain division, perhaps a lot more specific information around some of their questions, and then perhaps a lot more sensitive information. In many cases, we found, where we, for issues of sensitivity, we may not want to present some of the more bad information, if you will, to the more general public. So there's some considerations there that we want this to be useful information. We don't want to necessarily put it out there for the world to see to make you look bad or something like that, to make it really a useful thing. When that kind of touches on, will the findings be shared publicly? Really looking at the sensitivities, if it's a, again, most, I think from our perspective, where these reports and this overall assessment is most useful is as kind of a learning tool and to inform, workforce development, not necessarily as a way to, draw attention to certain people and their either the good things going on or the deficiencies as well. And then just highlight one of the lessons learned, presenting the data as objectively as possible. I think this one's really, really key. 75% satisfaction may mean totally different things to different people. In your organization, if you were at 50% satisfaction the year before, that's a great thing. Somewhere else, it may not be. So really being as objective as possible and not concluding what is good or what is bad, but really letting the data speak for itself. And this kind of goes back to, a strong methodology that really allows, for that information to stand on its own. And then looking at next steps, we talked about it a little bit, and Susan pointed out that when she was actually at this agency a few years back and probably took one of the early iterations of this assessment, and we were talking about kind of, some of the issues about, she said, whatever happened with that. And I think that was something, one of our lessons learned, was that you need, if you're going to undertake an assessment like this, you need to be very clear what the action is at the end. Joe talked about survey fatigue and things like that, and assessment fatigue. One component of that is if you've asked someone to take the same survey for 4 years and never taken action on it or never communicated what that action is going to be, think about how your response rate is going to be and think about the overall satisfaction. So be careful what you ask for, and if you're going to ask it, make sure that you're ready to take some action on it. And that kind of goes into the be timely. No matter if this is an annual survey or just a one-time survey, it really is a point-in-time assessment of your workforce. So as quickly as possible that you can get out some meaningful information, the better. And with that, we have finished.
Thank you. I think in the interest of time, so you can hear from everybody, if it's okay with the audience, we'll take questions at the end. I want to introduce Dr. Roger Straw from HRSA, who is going to talk about HRSA's Health Workforce Initiative. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's currently the director of the Division of Workforce and Performance Management in the Bureau of Health Professions. He has joint responsibility with Ed Salzberg, who is new at at HRSA and is the director of the National Center for Health Workforce Analysis, for HRSA's workforce analysis activities, including the National Sample Survey of Registered Nurses, minimum data sets, supply and demand models for physicians and other health professions, and longitudinal evaluations for health professions training programs. But Roger has another role, and I'm going to talk about this in a minute. He's been a wonderful member of the National Advisory Committee for the Centers of Excellence. And Roger, just to embarrass you, I have a small token because he's moving off our board this year, and this is my chance to see him. Since he won't be attending our meeting in April. Actually, what we have for you is a very large book. And rather than ask you to carry it back to D.C., I put a picture of it in here. And I want this is my chance to thank him personally for his really wonderful and thoughtful contributions.